The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
And welcome! After a small break due to some event that happened last weekend, welcome back once again to Wrestling Unwrapped. I'm your host. My name is Patrick Hetsa, and joining me, as always, Mr. Harry Broadhurst. Harry, well, it is our third consecutive Sunday working with a WrestleMania.
Well, technically, we didn't work with WrestleMania on Sunday. You attended. I watched, but that was about the extent of it. There are plans, tentative though they may be, to get to WrestleMania 33 at some point. We promise the podcast won't go as long as the show did.
Oh, God. So long.
Yeah, that's one of the main reasons that I have a difficult time justifying eventually going. I mean, I want to eventually do a live WrestleMania. It's my big thing when it came to wrestling pay-per-views has always been a pay-per-view, one of the other big four, and then a WrestleMania. I got my big four, in which I got my favorite pay-per-view of them all, with the Royal Rumble, a couple of years ago. I did my original pay-per-view back in 2009 when I attended the Bragging Rights show. The only one I'm missing from my pay-per-view wish list is a WrestleMania, so at some point I'll get to it. It's just a question of when.
And how long will it be? And will it be like last Sunday's, the first one ever to finish after midnight? And the funny thing is, I made that prediction. I actually nailed that one. I said this would be the first ever WrestleMania to end on Monday on the East Coast. And I was 100% right.
Congratulations, you get a migraine from sitting through it.
You know what was worse? I went to another show after.
That's your own damn fault. What up, Pro Wrestling Revolver? We're getting back to you soon, too.
And
Wrestle Circus, we'll be getting to them for the first time shortly.
Hopefully.
Work in progress. All right.
Yes.
So, as per usual, we are a presentation of the W2M Network. You can find us online where, Patrick?
You can find us online either Facebook.com/WrestlingUnwrapped, or if you want more information, like all of our past episodes, our written reviews, which we're going to get back to eventually, we promise, or if you want to see some other great articles referring to football, pop culture in general, and, of course, wrestling, head over to W2Mnet.com. As well,
In addition, tonight's episode of Wrestling Unwrapped is brought to you by the Madhouse Toy Chest. stores.ebay.com/Madhouse Toy Chest. If you go online, you can find anything a wrestling fan might want. I screwed that all up tonight, didn't I?
No.
Stop. Rewind, retake.
Wow.
www.ebay.com/stores. What the? Patrick, help me here.
I believe you mean stores.ebay.com/.
Madhouse Toy Chest. Yes, that's exactly what I meant. If you're a fan of anything wrestling, DVDs, action figures, VHS tapes, magazines, posters, you name it, you can find it inside of the Madhouse Toy Chest. Mention that you heard this advertisement here on Wrestling Unwrapped and all of my tomfoolery included therein and receive a free gift with your purchase and a personal apology from myself.
Wow.
We're setting the bar low for tonight, which is actually kind of appropriate.
Yes, it is, because why? Well, we decided that we hate ourselves. We go from the ultimate thrill ride to the ultimate crash landing.
Well, I don't know if I agree with that. I think top to bottom nine was worse, but we'll get to it.
I'm sure that's a comparison. Quite frankly, you may think 9 was worse, but to me, even in both cases, there was still a WrestleMania that even beat that. both of these.
I think I know what yeah, that is, but we'll discuss that another time and place.
Yeah. We decided to really scrape the bottom of the barrel and find what we kind of consider to be one of, in some cases, the worst WrestleMania of all time, one of the worst WCW pay-per-views of all time, and a pay-per-view that is regarded as just one of the worst of all time. Plans are going to have to change because my partner will not be here next week due to other circumstances outside of the podcast, and I wish him the best.
So thank you. Nervousness aside, I'm looking forward to it as well.
Yes. So the Heroes of Wrestling the Heroes of Wrestling episode of the podcast will have to be pushed to another time. 2 weeks from now, we will most likely be doing WCW Spring Stampede 2000, where we will be introducing what we call WCW rules. We mentioned this a couple weeks ago. It is where we will have a stopwatch, either Harry or myself, and because there are so many damn matches, we will only be allowed to talk about the match for the length of a match. I believe the longest match on this pay-per-view was 7.5 minutes, and I believe the shortest was about 30 seconds.
The main event runs about 15, but the main event's really the only match on the show worth talking about, so.
Yeah. So that's going to be mighty interesting. That will be 2 weeks from today. As far as next week, to be determined. Not 100% certain about that yet, but it's going to be me and somebody.
Yes,
however, tonight, we start our April Fool's month by finishing with WrestleMania season. Last year, we actually did cover WrestleMania after when we did 32. I think we're going to be wishing we covered 32 again by the time we're done with WrestleMania 11.
I mean, you're building this up. I'm really, really looking forward to our big finish for tonight. And the reason I say that, well, that's part of it, but no, I actually almost call it the final reaction. I'm mixing up my podcasts again. I'm really looking forward to the big finish tonight because I have a funny feeling that our opinions in regards to the actual length of the show, in regards to the actual overall theory of the show, are going to differ a little more widely than we usually do.
I mean, possibly. We'll see. God knows it's going to be a mighty interesting one with the main event of Bam Bam Bigelow. Yes, you heard me right. Against Lawrence Taylor, and both of them have about half the roster in their corner. Well, let me rephrase that. Bam Bam Bigelow has half the roster in his corner. Lawrence Taylor has half of the NFL in his corner. Why does it sound familiar? Football versus wrestling. Yeah.
To be fair, back in those days, it was pretty much Oprah when it came to the Million Dollar Corporation. You get a spot. You get a spot. You get a spot.
And mind you, only one other member of the Million Dollar Corporation actually wrestles on this show. Speaking of the rest of this show.
I'm ready.
Alrighty, speaking of the rest of the show, let's go to Harry for the results from WrestleMania 11.
Alright, I might need some assistance here because I'm not sure, so I hope you still have your Wikipedia thing pulled up. Hartford Civic Center?
Yes.
Okay, good. I wanted to make sure. It is April 2nd, 1995. This is World Wrestling Federation WrestleMania 11 from the Hartford Civic Center in Hartford, Connecticut. Yes, they used to run small towns for WrestleMania. No offense to those of you listening in Connecticut, but let's be honest, you're small.
I think this would be the last time, though.
No, because 12 was in a 12 and 16 were both in Anaheim, and neither and that building is not big. The pond.
Anyway,
it's a hockey arena. It's not that big.
It's almost 19,000.
I mean, yeah, this building right here is something like what 9,000 people or so, 10 if you're lucky. Really?
Yeah.
Are there 16,000 people living in Hartford? Anyway.
No. 16,305, but I mean... I met people from England and all over the world last weekend.
Yeah, WrestleMania is a thing now. It was not so much back then. All right, these are your results for WrestleMania 11. The Allied Powers of Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog, and Lex Luger defeat Eli and Jacob Blue. You thought I was going to call them the Harris Brothers. Admit it.
Oh, no, I was going to mention it after.
That's 6 minutes and 37 seconds. Well, I always keep track of them as the Harris Brothers. And in my notebook, I have Harris Brothers written down. But upon the rewatch, I remembered that they were Eli and Jacob Blue with Uncle Zebediah, or Jedediah, if you're... Who was it later in the show that called him Zebediah or Jedediah?
Sounds like Lawler.
No, it wasn't Lawler. It was one of the guest commentators. It might have been Nicholas Totoro.
Gotta help us.
Oh, yeah, we should mention, this one's like freaking Celebomania. But we'll talk about that later.
Yes, because there are matches where that ties in on several different occasions. Jeff Jarrett retains the Intercontinental title despite losing by disqualification to Reza Ramon at 13 minutes and 32 seconds thanks to a clip assist from the Roadie, a.k.a. the Road Dog, a.k.a. Brian James Gerard Armstrong. Get it? Got it. Good. All right, moving on.
The real singer of With My Baby Tonight.
See, now, if this were that Something to Wrestle With podcast with Tom Pritchard, which, by the way, I highly recommend, Pritchard would break into B.G. James's voice singing the song. Anyways, I feel like Conrad Thompson. Hey, it's Conrad. All right. The Undertaker defeats King Kong Bundy of the Million Dollar Corporation with a leaping clothesline. Yes, you listened to that correctly. At 6 minutes and 41 seconds. Owen Hart and That's My Yoko Zuna win the WWF Tag Team titles from the Smoking Guns after Owen pins Billy following a bonsai drop by Yokozuna at 9:52. Bret Hart defeats Bob Backlund via stoppage, because I did not hear and I quit.
Oh, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that one.
With a crossface chicken on Bret Hart in a match where somebody else's finisher is applied and there's no actual submission, but the bell rings anyway. Shifty eyes. All right. At 9:34. Diesel. Honk, honk, honk. Every time I see Diesel now, I'm reminded of The Rock's promo. I can't help it. Rock has ruined Diesel for me. Retains the WWF Championship, pinning the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, at this point still relatively the Heartbreak Mid-Carter, at 20 minutes and 35 seconds with a jackknife powerbomb. And in your main event, and I can't believe I had to add this guy to my freaking DVD list, Lawrence Taylor pins Bam Bam Bigelow with a second rope forearm strike at 11 minutes and 44 seconds, because my list wasn't long enough as it was. Lawrence Taylor would be the only person added to my list during the course of the show, because of course he was!
Every match except one featured at least one team or wrestler being accompanied by somebody.
Or multiple.
And I'm pretty sure the last match more than makes up for the match not having anybody.
The only match that doesn't have anybody is Backlund and Brett, right?
Yep. And that one has a special referee.
It does.
Actually,
who will talk?
Technically, two matches have a special referee, but one of them,
One of them is irrelevant for the sake of conversation in terms of history. I'm sorry, but unless you actually cared about baseball in the mid-90s, you have no idea who Larry Young is.
I did care about baseball in the mid-90s, and I still have no idea who the hell Larry Young was.
What do you say we get to it, Patrick?
Do we have to?
Yes. It's our version of April Fool's, and the pranks we're pulling are on ourselves.
from Hartford, Connecticut, because when I think big city WrestleMania, I think Hartford, Connecticut.
You do realize that any listeners we may have ever had in Connecticut are gone now, right? All two of them.
No. No, just Hartford, Connecticut. All, hell, I don't even know that we had any from Hartford, Connecticut.
Connecticut in general, really. I know nobody in Stamford's listening anyway.
Well, one person who might be associated with Stamford's listening, and I know because he blocked me.
Brother.
How the hell was I supposed to know that he blocked me?
All right, let's get to the show.
God help us. This is WrestleMania 11. And kicking things off. Boy, Lex Luger, did you fall off a cliff?
Hold on. Before we discuss the opening match here, I do want to give the WWF credit for something to start the show.
I know exactly where you're going with this, and I kind of forgot about it, but yes, it does warrant a mention, definitely.
The WWF chose a special Olympian to sing America the Beautiful, and I'm not real big in opera. Opera's not my thing. It never has been. It never will be. It's kind of an operatic voice, but she does a really good job, so I want to give credit where credit was due.
You know who was supposed to originally do it?
I do not.
A band called Fishbone.
Called who?
Fishbone.
Never heard of them.
Exactly. So I'm kind of glad that they asked Kathy Huey to do it instead. Kathy Huey is the name of the singer.
Thank you for that. Thank you, Wikipedia.
True. And before we even get anywhere else, we probably should mention there are celebrities galore to the point that they're actually mentioned. What the hell is it with this year and the bigger focus on celebrities? The entire intro video is the celebrities at WrestleMania, and then you say WrestleMania 11 starring none of the wrestlers. Nicholas Totoro, Jonathan Taylor Thomas, Salt-N-Pepa, who's cut from the network version and probably the DVD version, Jenny McCarthy, when she was still doing Singled Out on MTV, and Pamela Anderson.
Back when she was still smoking effing hot.
I think at this point was she on Baywatch at this point, or was she still on Home Improvement? I think she was on Baywatch at this point.
She would have still been on Baywatch at this point. Home Improvement would have been a couple of years later.
No, other way around.
Really?
She was the first Tool Girl.
I don't think they're calling to listen. I don't think people are listening to hear us talk about Tool Time.
I like this show. It's legitimately one of my favorite shows.
To the pay-per-view, Patrick.
I know.
This is how we get heat from management.
I know. I don't want to talk about it. Anyway. Allied Powers, Lex Luger, a British Bulldog, because Lex Luger has no push anymore. Facing Jacob and Eli Blue with Uncle Jedediah or Zebekiah, a.k.a. Zeb Coulter. I do kind of wonder if that was done on purpose.
A.k.a. Dirty Dutch Mantel.
With a hell of a lot more hair than he has now.
Well, in fairness, he's also 20 years younger at this point than he is now.
Yep. That's an understatement. Well, no, it's not, but it's 100% true. Great team won. That's about all I can really say. I mean, you didn't go into this thinking that the Blue Brothers really had any shot of winning.
No, I agree with that. I think the issue. I think the issue at hand here is, despite the fact that the Brothers Blue were on a winning streak going into this particular event, there is nobody who had thought they had a snowball's against a pair of former champions in the WWF, specifically being former tag team champion Lex Luger and former Intercontinental champion Davey Boy Smith, a.k.a. the British Bulldog.
You're holding the tag team title?
Huh?
Luger held the tag team titles?
I'm pretty sure at some point he did in the WWF.
No. He only won the Rumble.
Yeah, how'd that work out for him? 1994 called it once its Luger pushback.
Remember, folks, this guy was supposed to be the next Hulk Hogan.
Brother.
I'll be your hero.
Oh, for the love of God, please stop. Anyway, back to the match at hand. You know what I did like about this match?
What's that?
The theme song for Luger and Bulldog as a tag team. That was pretty cool. Everything else about this match kind of sucked.
Well, look who's in the match.
I was actually a really big fan of Davey Boy. Davey Boy was always one of my favorites. I think he always got a bum rap, too. I mean, yeah, Bret carried him at SummerSlam 92, and the argument that Bret didn't carry him is ridiculous, given Davey Boy's traditional altered state around that time frame. But at the same time, when it came to these four men here, Smith was by far and away clearly the best worker.
That goes without saying.
I mean, unless Coulter counts, because Coulter could actually throw down back when he used to get to the ring.
It doesn't.
Well, you know.
So, I mean, yeah, British Bulldog is definitely the top of the four, contrary to what the titles might say, because I think out of the four, Luger would hold the most. Question becomes why.
Luger would be the only one of these four to ever win a World Heavyweight title. And he'd win it twice, I think?
I feel like
He won it once when it was the NWA title and once when it was the WCW title.
I'm looking.
I'm telling you, I'm certain, because he won the title when it was vacated when Flair left back in 91, and then he won it from Hogan in 97.
Yep, you would be correct two times. Fun fact, he is the second ever WCW Triple Crown winner.
Sting?
I believe so.
Regardless, getting away from the topic at hand again.
Oh, Flair. Flair was number one. Sting was three. Anyway.
Ron and Don Harris. It's called an 8-ball. Creative control.
Craft 1 and Craft 2.
Nazi sympathizer A and B.
I was trying to get around that one.
I wasn't.
I know.
On a personal level, they can go screw themselves. On a professional level, they can go screw themselves.
They suck.
Like I said,
the right team won here, and thank God, because their mindset kind of fits their gimmick here. Very backwoods, anti... You know what, I'm not going to go any further.
Yeah, I feel like if we can continue this rant any further, we may end up getting ourselves in trouble with the network censors. And I mean that legitimately, not jokingly, because there are words and thoughts and opinions that I have of Ron and Don Harris's both professional and physical beliefs that will get me kicked off of the W2M network.
So why don't we move on?
We shall, with our Intercontinental Championship match. And these guys wrestled a crap ton and a half back in this time frame, including at the Royal Rumble, which you can tell because it's pretty much the same match as the Royal Rumble. Not to say it's a bad match. It's not a great match. Oh, God. Dang it.
Razor Ramon takes on Jeff Jarrett. The only difference here between this one and the Rumble is who walks out with the belt. Well,
no.
I just realized that that's wrong. It's how he walks out. It's how the person walks out with the belt.
Well, they actually showed how he walked out of the belt at the Royal Rumble. It was in the
Razor couldn't walk.
Well, it was an attempt at the Razor's Edge where Razor's knee gives out, and then Jarrett catches Ramon Scott Hall in a small package.
What else happened? Because you're skipping over one very glaring fact.
Doesn't Rhodey clip him at the Rumble, too?
Thank you. That's why he couldn't get Jarrett up for the Razor's Edge.
Well, in this instance, Ramon has an assistant at ringside with him to prevent interference from the Rhodey. Yeah, that doesn't really work out, though.
Of course not. In this case, it's Razor Ramon with the 1-2-3 Kid, Jeff Jarrett once again with the actual singer of With My Baby Tonight, the Rhodey. Or, if you ask Howard Finkel, the Rhodey?
He's confused. He doesn't find that to be an entertaining name. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, but you are right, because they end up wrestling a very similar match. And this would be the last case. Well, actually, technically, you could see this would be the start of WWF moving to monthly pay-per-views, because after this is the first In Your House. If they were still doing monthly pay-per-views, if they were previously doing them, my guess is this would have been the fourth or fifth straight pay-per-view that they would have wrestled against each other, because that's the kind of way that it seemed to be going. And, I mean, they didn't, like you said, they didn't wrestle a bad match. Yes, I made the joke already. But not terrible, but not anything really memorable, and just felt like a way to get out of there with Jarrett still holding the belt, to me.
Because if I'm not mistaken, wouldn't Razor Ramon end up feuding with the 1-2-3 Kid just a couple of months later? Like, I think they had the crybaby match at SummerSlam, if I recall correctly.
I believe you would be right. I'm looking up In Your House, so give me a second.
The first In Your House is main evented by Diesel versus Sid, and then the second In Your House is main evented by Diesel versus Sid as well, because that's the Lumberjacks pay-per-view. We'll talk more about this a little bit later on in the show, so stay tuned for it. But the WWF title match sees Diesel retain, as we mentioned in the results. The following night on Raw is when Psycho Sid would turn on Shawn Michaels. And then Diesel.
Sure, don't like Shawn Michaels.
Well, back then he was very easy to not like.
And would go and would keep that same attitude all the way through WrestleMania 14, which you can also listen to if you want to go to Spreaker or W2Mnet.com. All you got to do is look for the link and just listen to our previous episode. That's WrestleMania 14, Austin Michaels Tyson.
Show.
Damn right.
You can also find it on YouTube on WrestleMania Unwrapped.
Indeed. And I'll have to try and remember to end this one, too.
All right, anyways, back to the match at hand here. So, it's like we said, and yeah, we kind of jokingly used the Roman Reigns reference here. Not a good match, not a bad match, but it's just a match. But in all honesty, these two were capable of so much more against each other, because both of them, when Scott Hall was on, Scott Hall was on. And I've always felt that Jarrett's an underrated worker. He's not an entertaining personality, but he was an underrated worker.
Broke 6,000 guitars, never drew a dime.
Only over in Memphis, the Jeff Jarrett story. Booyah! All right, moving on.
Global Force Gold, the new Jeff Jarrett story.
Back to work here on this particular episode, now that we're done making bad Jeff Jarrett jokes. No, I actually always thought that these two worked really well together. Long-time listeners of the show will know that one of my standbys when it comes to these reviews and looking up facts and historical information on them is a guy who used to write for 411 Mania by the name of J.D. Dunn. I use J.D. Dunn's review for this show, as I usually do, in order to keep track of his thoughts. And he adds historical tidbits and stuff, things, and to pepper out his reviews. And by all means, if you get the opportunity, 411mania.com/wrestling/the Dunn List, and you can check out all of J.D.'s reviews there. He actually put this match at just over 3 stars, and I tend to agree with him. I have it right around the 3-star mark myself. I mean, we'll do official star ratings if we ever get back to doing the written reports, but I have it right around the 3-star rating myself. At the same time, I think given the quality of the two men in the ring, when it comes to their in-ring performance capabilities, that's a little bit underwhelming.
I mean, yeah, you could actually make the argument that this is one of the better matches of the night, but given that it is the biggest pay-per-view of the year for the WWF, I think, yeah, it's a little bit disappointing for it to only be 3 stars. Speaking of disappointing...
According to JD, it is the second highest-rated match on the evening. You can probably guess what the top-rated match on the evening is.
Shouldn't be.
Sean and Diesel, sir.
I know what I said. But before we get to that, why don't we get to the next match?
No further comments on this match in the aftermath, which sees the 1-2-3 Kid and Razor Ramon laid out by Jeff Jarrett and the Roadie. You'd think this be setting up a tag match, playa. You'd think wrong. The 1-2-3 Kid would instead be in line for a tag team title opportunity with longtime partner Bob Sparky Plus Holly, and they would eventually take on the new tag team champions Yokozuna and Owen Hart on an episode of Raw.
While Razor Ramon would beat the Roadie and Jeff Jarrett at In Your House 1 in a handicap match.
Before being turned on by the 1-2-3 Kid, I would imagine at Raw on the road to maybe after King of the Ring. Because this would be the King of the Ring that Mabel wins, which makes zero freaking sense. But that's neither here. It could have been worse. We could have done King of the Ring 95 here instead.
Folks, there's a reason why this is considered to be the lowest period in WWF history. I believe sometime in September they would set the record for the lowest attended event in WWF history.
And for those of you curious, he still holds the record to this day, if I am not mistaken, at Diesel as the lowest drawing WWF champion in history.
That would be correct. Let's see how Brock does.
All right, back to the show.
We Hate Roman Reigns Club. What?
That's how we're going to segue.
It was a hell of a lot better match than this one, that's for sure. Our next contest, the streak's technically on the line, although it wasn't the streak yet. Undertaker taking on King Kong Bundy with, I use this term very loosely, special guest referee Larry Young, an MLB umpire because of the lockout, as the referee for this match. Yeah, this is the, I believe, either the shortest or the second shortest match on the show. I can kind of understand why.
It is the second shortest. It is 4 seconds longer than the opener.
Got it.
And to be fair, most of this match is focused on the urn, not anything that Undertaker and Bundy actually did. You remember that storyline where a heel would steal the urn from the Undertaker and the Undertaker would go about getting it back and getting vengeance? Yeah, this was pretty much every one of those storylines all wrapped into one here, because Bundy stole it, courtesy of Erwin R. Scheister at the Rumble, and then he wrestled Bundy here at WrestleMania, and then Kama stole it and melted it down into a chain that was a bit kerfuffle, and then he wrestled Kama in a casket match at SummerSlam 95 in a match that sucked.
I feel bad for The Undertaker because he is pretty much the definition of the Monster of the Month Club. That's all he's getting.
Around this time frame, yes, it doesn't really get any better for him until the night after WrestleMania 13 when Mick Foley debuts in the company.
12.
Was it 96? I thought it was 97. But all right, that works.
Mick Foley teamed with Vader to take on the tag champs at WrestleMania 13.
Okay, so then it was 12. My mistake.
Yep.
As far as this match, yeesh. Remember how we mentioned the finish being, I believe you said, a flying clothesline off the second rope?
No, I said the finish to this match was a leaping rhythmic ring clothesline. The finish to the main event is a second rope forearm strike.
Ooh, my mistake. Yeah, it's probably because Undertaker couldn't get his ass off.
Well, he does body slam, Bundy. He's got that going for him. I forgot about the body slam.
Once again, stealing from Hogan. Yeah, anyway. So, this match blew. This match absolutely sucked. And like you said, the focus of the match wasn't the match itself. This was a match just to get Undertaker, who at this point was still fairly popular with the fans. This was just a match to get him onto the card, and the entire point of it was the transition from DiBiase holding onto the urn to Kama stealing it so that he can melt it into a chain. And remember, this was Kama Mustafa, the Supreme Fighting Machine, a.k.a. ripping off the then-brand-new UFC.
Well, I have nothing nice to say about this match. There's no way around it. This match, it's up there amongst the worst that we've ever covered with, like, the mixed tag match from December to Dismember and... what was the other match that we gave a dud to? I know there was another match when we did our written reviews that we gave a dud to, and I'm trying to remember what it was. Jarrett and Mabel, maybe? Jarrett and Mabel, maybe? Which actually, wasn't that SummerSlam 90? That was SummerSlam 94, not 95. Oh, God, can you imagine if we actually do SummerSlam 95? Ugh.
We are never doing SummerSlam 95, and don't you ever bring that up again.
And then one of these times we put out a fan request, and overwhelming winner will be SummerSlam 95.
The
anyway.
Hell it will. I'll fudge the ratings myself.
Yeah. Giant Gonzalez at WrestleMania 9, King Kong Bundy at WrestleMania 11, took off WrestleMania 10. Poor Taker. Poor
Taker. We could mention the state of mind that Jake Roberts was in at WrestleMania 8 as well.
Well, in fairness, Roberts was leaving the company shortly thereafter, therefore anything that Roberts did during the course of that match was more or less irrelevant.
Rendered obsolete. Oh, wait, he doesn't have that gimmick anymore. Never mind.
He was... Roberts was deleted from the WWF. All right, we're going to get sued, so let's continue on.
The WWE.
Anthem ain't got a leg to stand on. Sue me. Anyway... the next match actually isn't that bad. It's for the tag team titles. It is Owen Hart and his mystery partner against the Smoking Guns. For as big
Three-quarters of the match isn't bad.
For as big as he was at this point, Yokozuna could still move.
Just not very quickly.
I disagree with that. I actually think he's significantly more agile than Bundy was, despite weighing almost 100 pounds more.
I mean, you're not wrong, but at the same time, you know, he was able to move because this is only a 10-minute match, and he doesn't have to do a whole hell of a lot in it. So when he is in there, I would hope he'd be able to move somewhat because he only has to work, like, a third of a match.
Well, to be fair, he is teaming with Owen Hart, one of the most underrated wrestlers in WWF history.
This is true.
It is Owen Hart and Yokozuna taking on the Smoking Guns, Oak, Bark, and Billy Pre-Sunny.
Wait, what?
So Sunny. No, Pre-Sunny. Sunny would be around with the Body Donnas right around 95, 96, right?
Oh, God, I forgot about that. Yeah.
And then she would end up leaving the Body... She would end up leaving the Body Donnas for the Smoking Guns. When the Smoking Guns won the tag team titles.
And then I believe she would leave the Smoking Guns for the Godwins, because, sure, why not?
Where goes the gold, goes the Sunny.
Apparently. The same could be said for even today. Anyway.
But yeah, the match itself, I mean, when Yokozuna is able to rely on Owen Hart, that's probably a pretty good person to be able to rely on for most of the match. And I mean, this seemed more of the Owen Hart show to me. And yeah, Yokozuna, when he is in there, does pretty good, despite the fact that, my God, he had to have gained almost 100 pounds in a year, because he's huge compared to WrestleMania 10.
Yeah, he was taking off old television to lose weight, and it had the exact opposite effect.
Yeah, and I mean, you realize at this point, he's only 29. And he would just get bigger.
Wasn't the final total somewhere near 800 before he passed away?
Possibly.
I'll have to look more into that, but I want to say the final total was somewhere around 800.
According to this, Yokozuna's build weight as of this pay-per-view was 646, or 641.
I think Cornette says 601 the next night on Raw, but yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, and I believe at WrestleMania 10, he was...
550?
Looking... I'm seeing 505 to 550. So, yeah, we're talking almost 100 pounds heavier in 1 year, which is scary. So, yeah, he is able to move, and he'd move much better than he did the following year in that six-man tag at WrestleMania 12. He made Jake Roberts look good. By the way, Jake Roberts and Yokozuna tagged in more than one match. Not just in the WWF, though. Boy, I'm not looking forward to Heroes of Wrestling.
I completely forgot about that son of a bitch.
Yeah.
What have you done to us, Ketsa?
We said we hated ourselves. We're going to prove it now. So Owen Hart and Yokozuna end up winning to become the brand new WWF Tag Team Champions.
Before we move on from this match here, and what happens afterwards, what were your thoughts on the Smoking Guns?
Good, not great.
Underrated, I thought. I think that they were a lot better as a team than they were ever really given credit for, and I think a lot of that had to do with inferior competition around this time.
I mean, yeah, we are talking about 1995 WWF here. I actually am one of the people that thinks Billy Gunn was an underrated guy. I think at some point he may have been among the most athletic on the entire roster. You're talking about a guy who was able to hit a Famouser with a guy standing on top of a table and do it clean.
I think the issue with Billy Gunn is he started believing his own hype and his work ethic went to crap.
Yes. When he, much like Razor, when Billy Gunn was on, Billy Gunn was very good. Bart Gunn, let's be honest, Bart Gunn's career died at about 4 years from now, although some could argue that it was already dead.
I would argue that Brawl for All was a resurgence for Bart Gunn until Butterbean happened.
Yeah. That's why I said 4 years from now, because that's when that fight happened.
Anyways, all right, you were saying about Owen and Yoko as tag team champions.
To be fair, they would hold the belts for roughly 5 months. Technically losing it one extra night, but they really didn't. God, that was such a confusing thing.
Oh, are you referring to the tag match where it ends up being Owen and Davey Boy? Or
nope, you got the wrong person.
Someone and Yoko defending the tag team titles against Diesel and Shawn.
Davey and Yoko.
And then Owen comes into the ring and ends up getting pinned, and they lose the tag team titles. Is that the match you're referring to?
Yes, and then Owen Hart and Yokozuna whine about it. They get the belts back because Owen wasn't in the match, even though he was in the match, technically. So they are giving the belts back the very next night on Raw, only to lose them back to the Smoking Guns. And we end up right back where we are going into WrestleMania 11. Because, sure, why not? So, I believe that would be about the point that Sonny would join them.
Are we ready to move on?
Sure. To talk about a really interesting match. Bret Hart versus Bob Backlund in an match with Roddy Piper as the special guest referee.
You suck.
I had to. Jeez, I got myself on that one.
I had to mute my phone for a few seconds so I could collect my composure. You suck.
It's supposed to be an I Quit match between Bret Hart and Bob Backlund, someone going from Survivor Series when Bob Backlund beat Bret Hart. God, this is going to be hard with all the B's. Bob beats Bret.
Bob beats Bret when Helen throws in towel.
Yes, in a match where that was the entire point, was to throw in the towel. And Owen convinces...
Who?
Helen.
I blinked
that their mother. Their mother.
So, Bob ends up winning and then loses the belt to Diesel, and that puts us here. So,
SummerSlam 1994, this isn't.
SummerSlam 94? That was Survivor Series 94.
Survivor Series 94, excuse me. We were just talking about our SummerSlam 94 review a little bit earlier. Survivor Series 94, this isn't. Survivor Series 94 actually is not a terrible match.
No, it's not. It's long, if I recall, though.
Yeah, it's very long. 28 minutes and 35 seconds. But it's still... I still find it very entertaining.
Oh, no doubt about that. What is it with Bret Hart and long matches at Survivor Series? Because didn't he wrestle at 92 in a title versus title match that went over a half hour, too? With Shawn Michaels?
It was
92, not 97.
It was champion versus champion, not title for title.
I didn't say for title. I said title versus title.
Well, that implies that it's flip both belts. It's champion versus champion is the easier way to say that. But, yeah, that match went like 27 and a half minutes itself. Because if I'm not mistaken, that's on the Best There Is, Best There Was, Best There Ever Will Be DVD set, I do believe.
It's on one of them. I know I have it somewhere.
It's either Best There Is or it's on the Heart and Soul, the Heart Family Legacy.
Maybe. But, I mean, this was definitely not the Survivor Series match. This one seemed more of a joke and almost seemed more of, all right, let's just do this and get it out of the way, and Bret Hart can move on to getting back into the title picture, which he wouldn't be until Survivor Series 95.
Yes, when he beats Diesel for the title and Diesel puts him through the announce table, and what I do believe is the first example of that ever happening on WWF pay-per-view.
Very well could be.
Almost certain.
Yeah. But this match even features like Roddy Piper throwing in some jokes. You know, at one point, Bret Hart has a move on Backlund. He's checking on Backlund, and he just haphazardly just goes, Bret, and Bret's like, nah. And there's a reason that I make the joke that got both of us at the very beginning, because what is the entire point of an I Quit match?
Well, traditionally, it's to make your opponent say those two magic words.
Correct.
Jerry Waller brings up a good point here, in probably one of the few times that I'll actually agree with him here. Bob Backlund doesn't say, I quit. Instead, you just hear Bob Backlund just go, ah, 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 ah. And Roddy Piper decides to throw it, and this coming after Bret Hart decides to use the crossface chicken wing.
Well, technically he doesn't decide to use the crossface chicken wing. Backlund has Bret in the crossface chicken wing, and Bret reverses it.
No, Bret put it on easily.
I'm pretty sure
he struggled to get him
out.
Down, but no, Bret definitely puts it on. He doesn't reverse out of it.
I'm pretty sure Backlund had Bret in the crossface chicken wing at one point, and then Bret got it and got Backlund into it. I literally just watched the show earlier today. I am almost 100% positive on this one. But regardless, the match quality itself becomes a concern here. The Survivor Series 94 match, while long, is very entertaining if you're a fan of that style of wrestling. I personally have it at 3.5 stars. This particular match doesn't touch 2 for me. It's just as Patrick said, it's basically Bret and Bob going through the motions in order to get through this match and continue Bret on his road back towards title contention and back into the upper mid-card main event level picture. As a matter of fact, Bret would have the best match on the very first In Your House pay-per-view, and that is the match that is on the Best of the In Your House DVD as well. Which I do believe we've covered at one point.
No, we haven't. We've talked about doing that one, but we've never done it.
Okay, well, it was against Takushi, a.k.a. Jinsei Shinzaki.
Bless you.
That's racist.
Thank you, Rob Van Dam. He makes it worse what he wants.
Political correctness was not a thing in ECW. But anyways, no, in all seriousness, though, Bret would go on to have an excellent match against Jinsei Shinzaki, a.k.a. Hakushi, at the 1990s, the first In Your House pay-per-view. I forget what it was called. I know there's a subtitle for it, but I don't remember it. And then he would go on to have a horrible match against Jerry Lawler at SummerSlam 95.
Retroactively titled In Your House Premiere.
So never actually given a full-on name at the actual show. Noted.
Yeah, I don't think they would start naming them until later on. Like, In Your House 2 was retroactively titled something.
The Lumberjack.
And 3 was unofficially called the Triple Header. And eventually would just be called the Triple Header. That was the triple title match.
Tag team WWF Continental.
Bret wins in a throwaway waste of a match. Granted, they kind of needed to fill time here because there's only 7 matches on this card, and if I'm not mistaken, it's still only 2.5 hours.
You remember the glory days when WrestleMania was less than 3 hours?
Honestly, no. Sorry to say this, but I think I've only been alive for about 5 WrestleManias that were actually under 3 hours.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Great, now you got me thinking about it.
All right, let's move on and continue with the show.
Indeed. So, our next contest, the match that should be the main event. Ugh.
I get it. I get that you want to build Lawrence Taylor's involvement as this huge thing, and I guess technically at this point it is for the company because, let's be honest, they don't exactly have a whole lot in the way of mainstream publicity working for them at this point. So any kind of positive publicity that they were able to get through the mainstream, specifically Taylor's involvement, they're going to take advantage of.
But to put that in the main event, just because you have, you know, so many NFL stars, some of whom would actually get into wrestling, or one of which would get into wrestling, but yeah, it should not have been the main event here. Yes, we're going to talk about him. Shut up. Anyway, this contest, though.
I know we don't have a choice. We don't have a choice but to talk about him because he's involved in the match. I know.
This contest, however, for the WWF Championship, and features all of the other celebrity involvement, aside from Salt and Pepper, Diesel defends the WWF title against Shawn Michaels. Now, we have to go back to Royal Rumble. We have to, actually. Because Shawn Michaels pulled off what many argue to be the greatest performance in Royal Rumble history by becoming the first. It has happened since, even though the WWE wouldn't tell you so, but becoming the first person to go from number one and win the Rumble itself.
Shawn's performance is tainted in that 1995 Rumble due to the 60-second intervals.
I was getting to that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Like, seriously, that was going to be my very next point.
Great minds and all that fun stuff.
Sure. However, yes, there's the fact that it's only 60 seconds, so the match itself is, if I'm not mistaken, the shortest of all time, even shorter than the 20-man Rumble, which was the very first one. I could be wrong about that. However, also for winning the Royal Rumble, he was supposed to have one Pamela Anderson accompany him to the ring at WrestleMania for his match against Diesel. However, like I said, this bears mentioning, Nicholas Totoro of NYPD Blue was supposed to be a detective on the case that Pamela Anderson disappeared. Basically, she and Shawn Michaels got into a fight, she left, and she was never seen again until this match, when, well, she's replaced by Jenny McCarthy. I, truth be told, would have taken Jenny McCarthy over Pam Anderson. Yes, I know what I just said. Shut up.
1995 Pamela Anderson every day. Jenny McCarthy pretty much every year after, but 95 Pamela every day back then. God, what she's missing about that thing.
Both of them were. So,
I think McCarthy had more of an air of gettability about her than Anderson does, though.
Maybe. All right, moving on. So, Nicholas Totoro couldn't find Pam Anderson, and Nicholas Totoro was also the guest ring announcer for this one. Jonathan Taylor Thomas was the guest timekeeper. Jenny McCarthy ends up accompanying Shawn Michaels to the ring, along with Psycho Sid. And in the big surprise, Pam Anderson ends up accompanying Diesel to the ring for the championship match. Why make this change? Quite frankly, who the hell knows? Here's the problem that I have here, and I mentioned it to you when I first rewatched it, because I actually rewatched all the WrestleManias going into 33. Pam Anderson looks like she would rather be anywhere else.
I mean, you're not wrong. The problem, I don't dislike Pamela Anderson, and I feel the need to say this now. At the same time, though, there was just definitely an air of disinterest involved with her that you did not get from Jenny McCarthy. And if you actually take the time to watch the Raw After Mania that I was referring to, you can actually see they do a video of the four major celebrities that showed up at Mania: Pam, Jenny, Nicholas Totoro, and Jonathan Taylor Thomas. Jenny seems really enthusiastic. Jonathan Taylor Thomas seems really enthusiastic. Nicholas Totoro comes off as a major league mark. And Pamela Anderson wishes she could be anywhere else. So, I mean, I get your thought process when it comes to the whole Pamela Anderson thing. I do. At the same time, though, like I said, she was a major league celebrity at this point, so it was a huge get for the WWF.
Yeah, I mean, she was kind of one of the major focuses here, and you could argue the biggest focus of the entire show. And yeah, she, out of the four celebrities involved in this match, Jenna McCarthy seemed happy to be there, Nicholas Totoro seemed like an idiot, Jonathan Taylor Thomas, he looked like he was happy to be there, but kind of just eh. And yeah, Pam Anderson just looked like she'd rather be anywhere else. In terms of the match itself, Shawn Michaels kind of, well, Diesel has actually said multiple times where Shawn Michaels essentially tried to burn out Diesel almost immediately in the match because apparently, surprise, surprise, Shawn Michaels was pissed that he wasn't winning the match.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, two of the previous three Royal Rumble winners that had the title shot had gone on to win the title. I mean, granted, Yokozuna held the title for all of about 60 seconds. But Bret Hart won the title from Yoko at WrestleMania 10 and would hold it all the way until, I want to say, Survivor Series would be, when he dropped it to Backlund. So Shawn maybe figured that since he was the Rumble winner and they had a history of putting the Rumble winner over for the title, that he was due the title there. Not to mention, I think it's clear as day to anybody watching that Shawn was the best wrestler in the company at this point. Maybe barring
Real quick, you kind of have to put an asterisk on that. They had a habit of putting a Royal Rumble winner over.
I said two of the three because of Lex Luger. And frankly, I wouldn't put Luger over either.
Well, yeah.
Screw him. Oh. Anyway.
I'll be your hero. All right, I'm done.
Better be. Do the rest of this show by yourself.
Okay. Yeah, in terms of this match, though, Diesel wins, but Shawn looks the better of the two coming out of there just because Shawn absolutely destroys Diesel in terms of being able to keep up. Diesel could not keep up with Shawn Michaels.
You know who else Shawn absolutely destroys? That poor freaking cameraman.
Oh! Another thing that bears mentioning, because of the fact that, yes, they actually did get mainstream press coverage here, oh my God, there had to be 40, 50, they say 100, but no, but there had to be 40 members of press at ringside? Holy crap! And yes, at one point during this match, Shawn Michaels absolutely steamrolls and smashes a cameraman.
Well, what happens is it's when he gets sent over the top by Diesel, and instead of taking the bump that he's supposed to take, he ends up landing on a cameraman. Shawn, pissed off, proceeds to get up, grab said cameraman by the scruff, and throw him a quarter of the way up the entrance aisle.
Like we said, this was an angry Shawn Michaels because he was pissed. He was going to be the first. He was going to be the first Rumble winner of any sort to not win. Not counting Luger, because Bret won.
Technically, Luger won the match. He just didn't win the title.
That's true. No, he didn't.
No, he lost by disqualification thanks to Henning. Never mind.
Yep. So,
moving on.
We also have to mention the finish here, in which Shawn Michaels takes, and even Kevin Nash has said it, the absolute worst jackknife powerbomb ever that did not injure somebody.
How you doing? Wow, I'm blanking on the opponent. How you doing, Big Show? Took me a second.
Yeah, because
Shawn Michaels essentially takes the Jackknife Powerbomb, the one that wins the match, on his elbow. Just yikes. The match itself was good, but you can tell something was off, and Shawn Michaels was pissed off.
I think there is something else that bears mentioning here real quick as well, and we're running a little bit long already, so I kind of want to move on to the main event so we can get into our final reaction. But the other thing that I think bears mentioning in this match is the very obvious visual pinfall that Shawn Michaels gets as well, and Diesel himself is forced to acknowledge it on Raw the next night. So even through pissing and whining, Shawn does still get his way. He's still put over as the star and the man that should have won this match. Sid does something around ringside, and Hebner jumps out of the ring to scold him, and Hebner rises himself, hurting his ankle on the way down to the floor. And Shawn hits Sweet Chin Music and has a clear visual pinfall for about a 5 count before the referee gets in to count 2.
Yep, because I believe at this point Sweet Chin Music actually was a finisher, finally.
Yeah, he had gotten rid of the teardrop suplex in 94, I want to say.
And, yeah, because the teardrop suplex was about as good of a move as his original saying was. Was the teardrop suplex an actual good finisher? I don't think so.
Ladies and gentlemen, the teardrop suplex has left the building.
Man, he went through a lot of crap before he became the Heartbreak Kid. Anyway.
So
Diesel ends up winning and is the one who celebrates with everybody. So basically Diesel takes Shawn's WrestleMania moment and then takes his girl, technically. So, our next contest, our final contest, it's our main event. Seriously, it's our main event. Ugh. Lawrence Taylor versus Bam Bam Bigelow. Yes, I said main event. They're both accompanied to the ring by God knows how many people. I believe 6 each.
What do you have against this match being at the main event? I don't understand it. I think it makes perfect sense given the time frame in the company.
Not the main event.
I disagree. I think it was the best choice for the main event. This was the reason that the mainstream media was there.
You could argue Pam Anderson, too.
You could, but you'd be wrong. I mean, don't get me wrong. Pam was a big deal back in 1995, but Lawrence Taylor was just having finished an all-pro NFL career. He was the reason that the media was there. I'm sorry. You can't deny that. Much so you may want to.
I know. Yeah. Doesn't mean I have to like it.
Okay, that's all well and good, but I don't think there's any question that they made the right call making this the main event to me.
Yes, they did.
All right, carry on.
Anyway, so it is Bam Bam Bigelow against Lawrence Taylor. Lawrence Taylor, accompanied to the ring by his quote-unquote all-pro team of Ken Norton Jr., Chris Spielman, Carl Banks, Ricky Jackson, Reggie White, and I'm not going to mention the sixth guy yet. Bam Bam Bigelow being accompanied to the ring by members of the Million Dollar Corporation, Tatanka, King Kong Bundy, the leader of the Million Dollar Corporation, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, Irwin R. Scheister, Nikolai Volkoff, yes, I'm serious, and Kama the Supreme Fighting Machine. The last member of Lawrence Taylor's all-pro team, Steve Mongo McMichael.
Yes, Lawrence Taylor is to blame for Steve McMichael. Just let that soak in for a few seconds. And okay, Patrick may have a point. This shouldn't have been the main event.
And I believe, wasn't it Steve McMichael who took a shot at one of the wrestlers, too?
They all did at the start of it. All the members of the NFL team knocked down people from the Million Dollar Corporation. So it wasn't just McMichael. It was a whole group of guys.
Yeah. Now, I had heard rumors, and it ends up not working out, but I had heard rumors that it was kind of supposed to be a lumberjack match, more or less. But it never really ended up that way. Oh, by the way, you could also argue that this match also has a special guest referee. What a better way to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the first WrestleMania by having the same referee as the main event of the first WrestleMania, Pat Patterson. I had heard that this was supposed to be a lumberjack match, but it ends up never really feeling like that. I don't know, is that something that you ever heard, or am I just making something up?
I don't remember hearing anything about the fact that this was supposed to be a lumberjack match, but in fairness, I wasn't exactly following the product on a regular basis at this time either, so I can't give you an answer one way or the other there.
Neither was I. I was 3. So...
I was only 8.
So, all right. To be fair, I know I knocked this being the main event, blah, 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 and everything, but Lawrence Taylor put in work. You could tell that he trained for this. He, unlike Leno and unlike quite a few other celebrities, actually put in work and practiced and trained for this. That part is clear as day. So my hat's off to him for at least caring enough to be willing to do that. I mean, the match is better than it has any right to be. It's actually a pretty good match. It's just weird seeing that Lawrence Taylor and Bam Bam Bigelow main evented the biggest show of the year. It's weird to see.
Hey, it works out well for Bam Bam Bigelow. I actually just recently read an article about this match online while I was doing my research for this show. You know how much money Bam Bam made for that main event spot on this show?
Let's hear it.
$250,000 for one night of work.
For 10 minutes of work?
A little over, yeah. Thereabouts.
Not too bad.
And he got to yell at Salt and Pepper, too, so it all worked out well for him.
Yeah, that was cut from my version, but... Yeah, Salt and Pepper actually does play out. I don't know that they play out the team, or do they play out Lawrence Taylor? Maybe.
I watched the network version as well in preparation for the show, so I can't answer that question. I don't know.
They sing at some point because they sing "What a Man."
That's for Lawrence Taylor. I think they may also play Shoop while the All-Pro team's making their way down to the ring.
Maybe. They're acting as pseudo-cheerleaders, pretty much. And, yeah, so Lawrence Taylor and Bam Bam, at the very least, put on a passable match. You know,
They gave the training credit to Diesel here. If I'm not mistaken, the actual training credit for this match went to Pat Patterson, and I think that's part of the reason why he was the referee in order to help walk Taylor through the match.
Possibly. Maybe one of the Legends of Wrestling roundtables. I believe I heard Pat Patterson was the one who was talking about training. Somebody else trained with him, too. It wasn't Diesel, though. Of course not. But somebody else helped train Lawrence Taylor for this match, too. But yeah, it absolutely goes to... Pat Patterson, in terms of the major training. So, like I said, though, at least Lawrence Taylor was willing to train. So, and yes, in the end, Lawrence Taylor ends up picking up the victory and his ass is carted out of there. Let's be honest here. He did not walk out. He was carried out of there.
It's probably blown up.
Duh.
I don't think real athletes realize just how much work goes into a wrestling match. And I use the phrase real athletes referring to actual other sports stars, not in regards to the fact that wrestlers aren't athletes, because God knows I know enough wrestlers that would kick my ass if I ever insinuated that.
You're on your own with that one, my man.
But, I mean, in terms of the traditional sense of the word athlete, I don't think they realize just how much athleticism and how much balance and how much skill this pseudo-sport of ours actually takes. Does that sound better?
Yeah.
All right, we'll go with that then.
Yep. So yes, only 7 matches for WrestleMania 11. It is well. Any final thoughts?
I got a couple of interesting things to point out in our final reaction. So I said we go ahead and wow, I did it again. I knew I would. I got a couple of interesting things to point out for our big finish, so I suggest we go ahead and work our way right into that.
You drunk?
I'm not as stinky as you drunk. I am.
Big finish time, best and worst match in our cash and our trash of the pay-per-view. As we always start off, best and worst match. Harry, what is your worst match of this show?
Taker and King Kong Bundy. As dick as the opener is, at least the opener focuses on what happens in the ring. The vast majority of Taker and King Kong Bundy focuses on Kamal Mustafa coming down to the ring, kicking Paul Bear in his portly gut, and stealing the urn for a storyline continuation that literally no one gave a crap about. The in-ring action between Taker and Bundy was awful, too. It's the extra added bonus cherry on top-ish, I guess.
For me, as bad as that one was, I still have to give it to Brett and Bob for their match. Mostly because of the fact that you went from working almost a half-hour-long pay-per-view just a few months prior to this. This is a downgrade and a half. And then having Roddy Piper throw out a couple of jokes during the pay-per-view, along with the fact that you have Jerry Lawler already crapping on it, you know, because he hates Bret Hart at this point.
And Piper.
And Piper. Which I believe that one would happen later in the year? I'm trying to remember when Piper and Lawler happened in comparison to Bret and Lawler.
Lawler and Piper was King of the Ring 94. Bret and Lawler was King of the Ring 95.
Oh, okay. That's why I'm screwing that up. So, this was beyond a disappointment, and it was a complete waste of Bret Hart. Yes, I know I've never been fond of him, but he is better than this. It was, you know, less than 10 minutes, and it just, blah. Nothing about this was good for me. And even with the fact that Bret wins the match, a glorified submission match, and doesn't even get to use his own move. And then the coup de grace in this, pardon the pun, Bob Backlund doesn't actually say, I quit. He says, blah, blah, and Piper takes that as I quit. Waller was right. Backlund never said, I quit. That's the main focus of this match, and you don't even get that. So for me, that is far and away the biggest disappointment of the night. Yes, even over Taker and Bundy. Alrighty, what is your best match from this show?
Not that it really has a ton of contention. I'm going to go with Diesel and Shawn Michaels. I get that Shawn went out there to prove a point, but I'd say Diesel more than held up his end of the bargain as far as match quality goes.
Shawn, without a doubt, blows up Diesel, though, and he did it on purpose. I do feel bad for the camera guy, but, yeah, this was the longest match on the show, and with good reason. You could make the argument that Shawn should have won this, but at the same time, I think it made the following year's win a little bit sweeter, considering that he comes so close here, and then ends up finally picking up the win the following year as good guy Shawn Michaels. But without a doubt, I mean, look at the rest of this card. this is hands down the best match on this card. There's a reason this was the only other match that aired on Fox. Because, yes, even before WrestleMania was airing on USA Network, they would get a one-hour special on Fox. Only two matches from this show were shown, and it was the last two matches. Can you really blame them? All right, so we move to the cash and the trash. This one's going to be interesting. What's your cash for this show?
All right, so you picked Bob Backlund for your worst match. Actually, I Bob Backlund as my cash of the night, and it has absolutely nothing to do with the in-ring content against Britt. It's his backstage segment with Jonathan Taylor Thomas. I actually thoroughly enjoyed it, and it fit the Backlund character so well. It was such an excellent character piece. It's where Backlund and Jonathan Taylor Thomas are playing chess. I don't know if you remember it.
Oh, yeah, no, I know. That's What's Wrong with America Today. By the way, I said trash, but never mind.
No, we're starting with cash.
Okay.
We started on the negative for matches, so we're starting with the positive for cash and trash. Balance, my friend, balance. All right, anyway. So I'm going to go with Backlund and I actually thought you said cash. That's on me. But I'm going to go with the Backlund, Jonathan Taylor Thomas backstage fit. I really enjoyed it.
By the way, balance would be starting with bad and finishing with good. In this case, we're starting with bad and ending with bad. So that's on you, my man.
Whatever. It's WrestleMania 11. If you were expecting good coming into this, you're only fooling yourself.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, let's be honest here.
I'm stalling.
Is it because you can't think of anything nice to say about this show?
There's not a whole hell of a lot nice to say on this show to me. I mean, and you could make the argument of, you know, Shawn Michaels kind of taking his spot at the top of the card, but at the same time, we kind of already mentioned that when I mentioned the best match on the card. As bad as this year was, you can still see where they want to go with the future. Owen wins. Brett wins. Shawn may lose, but Shawn ends up looking like a star. Razor wins, granted by disqualification. So, well, actually, you can't even put Razor in there because by this point next year, he's gone. Or at least by this point next year, he's suspended and on his way out before going to WCW. And, you know, Diesel, sure, the experiment failed. Boy, this sounds familiar. But at least it's somebody new on top. By this point, Brett's actually been there a while. You know, this is what, this would be his 9th consecutive WrestleMania, I believe.
I think his first one was 2, so yeah, that sounds about right.
10 straight. So 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, so his 10th consecutive WrestleMania, because I believe he would own the record for the most consecutive WrestleManias, I think Triple H tied him this year. So he's not exactly young at this point. Diesel's young. Shawn's young, relatively speaking, compared to Brett, at least. Owen, young compared to Brett. And then you still have, you know, your stalwarts. You still have DiBiase playing a feature role here. You still have the Undertaker on here, even though that match, but still. So you can kind of see where they want to go in the future, and luckily, this would be the lowest of the low. You know, this would be the lowest that the WWF would get in terms of WrestleMania. By 12, you see improvement. 13, more improvement. 14, we already covered that. Huge improvement. So while this is as low as it gets, you can kind of see where they want to go and will go in the future. Of course, they'd probably start burning themselves out almost immediately with monthly pay-per-views, but they'd rebound from there. So it's the build towards the future for me. Now, let's try this again. What is your trash for this show?
All right, jackass. Jeez. You know, I always have a hard time finding something on shows to be upset about. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that I'm very forgiving in general when it comes. You know what? I think I do know where I'm going to go with here. I think I'm going to go with the constant "Where is Pamela Anderson?" updates here.
Damn it!
You're bordering on basically trying to sucker people that bought the pay-per-view hoping to see Pamela by saying, "Oh yeah, she's not here. You suck." And then having her come out with Kevin Nash completely and totally, or Diesel, sorry, honk, completely and totally undermines the storyline that you had where Pamela was going to accompany the winner of the Royal Rumble to the ringside at WrestleMania there. So I think I'm going to go with the whole Pamela Anderson arc and the fact that, as we talked about earlier, she seems so disinterested in being there in the first place.
Mine's yours on steroids. Mine is the over-pushing of the celebrities. Because, as you mentioned, we had the constant "Where is Pamela Anderson?" Then you also had the fact that Nicholas DeToro was the guest ring announcer and one of the interviewers. And I believe Nicholas DeToro had more segments on the show than Jim Ross. Plus Jenny McCarthy interviews, plus the main event with all the football players, plus the focus on Salt and Pepper. Plus you include, like I said, the opening video, which was almost a complete focus on the celebrities, and the actual intro to this pay-per-view itself, which was now starring all of the celebrities. I get that the WWF wanted mainstream attention at this time because, well, let's be honest, this was the lowest point for them, but in this case, they essentially sold themselves out. This was kind of the first case where it was, this is not a wrestling show, this is the big show with celebrities galore and everything. To me, this was even worse than, like, WWE putting a focus on Pitbull, Flo Rida, on Lunch Money Lewis playing at last week's WrestleMania. I know a lot of people crapped on that. A lot of people in the stadium actually enjoyed that, believe it or not. I was one of them. But they mentioned that, and people crapped on it. What if you had a pay-per-view like what we just reviewed today? It would get sandbagged to hell with all of the constant celebrity involvement. So for me, that's my trash for this, is the constant celebrity involvement.
I mean, I kind of understand the need for attention from mainstream media at this time. As we talked about, it is the low point for the WWF from a financial standpoint there. And obviously with the successful launch of Nitro later on in the year going into 95, and especially what WCW Nitro would do to the WWF in 1996, you could see how a lot of people would say going back there that there were times where it thought that they were going to have to close the doors on Titan Towers.
So, yeah, that's my biggest bother from this. All right. Final part. Harry, what is your final score, so you don't misunderstand me, for WrestleMania 11?
This show is very divisive, and it's been very divisive for the two of us throughout the course of conversating about it as well. That being said, upon rewatch here, and with the benefit of not having any, having the expectations of expecting crap going into rewatching it, I found myself actually surprisingly entertained overall through the quality of the show. So Razor and Jarrett's actually really good, even with a crappy finish. The in-ring back and forth between the two of them, they had amazing chemistry against each other in the ring at this time frame. Of course, they tried to repeat that chemistry in the beginning days of TNA, and it would fail miserably. But back then, back in 94, 95, when they were feuding over the IC title, they had amazing chemistry against each other, I've always thought. The tag team title match...
Razor Ramon also had a blood alcohol level that was under the legal limit here.
The tag team title match was actually a surprisingly entertaining affair to me as well, because I still think that despite being as big as he was, Yokozuna was still a very agile worker. I mean, granted, it was in short bursts, as Patrick pointed out, but by no means was the tag title match bad. Obviously, Diesel and Michaels is the standout match on the show, but as Patrick pointed out too, the main event does not get the credit that it deserves because of Lawrence Taylor's commitment to the role. And I think that in and of itself is enough for me to justify the rating that I'm about to give this. Hey, Patrick, I know this is going to surprise you. You ready? I give WrestleMania 11 a 5.
Oh, I was waiting for a 7 or something.
Nah, I'm going 5. There's still a lot of crap. The time-wasting skits with Nicholas Totoro, all the focus on Pamela, King Kong Bundy and Undertaker is just grossly horrible. It is a waste of an Undertaker match in retrospective of his WrestleMania streak. The opening tag team contest, despite being super one-sided, is also a match that nobody has any interest in. I can guarantee you there is nobody who has ever thought, hey, Ron and Don Harris, that'll put asses in the seats as the opener. So I'm going to officially go with a 5 for WrestleMania 11, and honestly, better than I expected watching it in retrospective.
All right. I mean, I'm trying to think of where to start here. To me, this is far and away one of the worst WrestleManias of all time. One of. Originally, we said we were going to do 9, but when I went back and watched the both of them, I found myself hating this one more. We probably could have actually done WrestleMania 4. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I didn't have 4.5 hours to watch a pay-per-view.
It was 3.5.
Whatever, it felt like 6.
Oh, trust me, I know. Actually, the opening promo mentioned it being 7, but I think that was 2 plays of it. Anyway, this is still not a good WrestleMania. This was not a WrestleMania. You know, going from watching 14 to being at 33 to watching this was a complete and severe downgrade. That's an understatement, I think. The opener, the Taker match, the I Quit match, all were, for me, crap. Owen and Yoko versus the Guns for the tag belts, better than it should have been. But look at who 3 out of 4 are. Yoko was able to rely on Owen. The Intercontinental title match. Okay, but Yoko was still able to rely on Owen for most of it.
I agree, but I think Yoko carried his weight, no pun intended.
That's a job in and of itself. Razor and Jarrett, it was almost a complete repeat of their previous match. The WWF title match, you could tell Shawn Michaels was pissed. And so he should have won. And the main event, I still don't think it should have been the main event. I get why that's why everyone was there, but let's face it, hindsight being what it is, we now know that the WWE generally likes to not put the main focus match on last. See WrestleMania 25, WrestleMania 18, Well, you could make the argument for WrestleMania 4 itself. Everyone wanted to see Hogan and Andre. Instead, you get it about an hour into the pay-per-view. Thank God Savage won that tournament. That doesn't mean that Lawrence Taylor and Bam Bam had to go last. It should not have been last. The WWF Championship should have been last. And I still find it weird that we have this argument even now. Most of the time it should be. I'd say last Sunday was okay that it wasn't. For me, more bad than good, I'm surprised that you actually went that low. I was expecting a 6 out of you, or a 7, legitimately. So when I say I'm giving it a 4, that means we still are only 1 point apart. And maybe this wasn't the worst. Maybe this wasn't the worst WrestleMania of all time. Not the worst WrestleMania, but it's one of the worst WrestleManias of all time.
I
had a
4
in my head the entire time. There's been times I've changed it kind of as we went through it. This time I had a 4 in my head the entire time.
What rating did we give 32? Do you remember?
I think we went higher. I think we went, like, 7s.
Yeah, because going back and, like, rereading all the results from 32 and stuff, I feel like 32 needs to be in the conversation as far as bad WrestleManias go.
As long as 27's in there, too.
Well, of course 27's.
And not just because of the main event.
Yeah, I know. You dislike Miz, but no, top to bottom, that card was pretty crappy.
28, it got better. 29, it got better.
30's one of the all-time best.
They managed to pull that out on the 10s. 10, 20, and 30. 10's not bad. 20's pretty damn good. 30 was good. Hopefully they can pull that off next year on, well, actually, 1 year from yesterday.
We'll see what they do with... We'll see what they do with 34.
Brock and Roman, don't forget. Don't forget. That's what you get. You don't like it? Too bad.
Tonight's episode of Wrestling Unwrapped has been brought to you by the Madhouse Toy Chest. stores.ebay.com/Madhouse Toy Chest. If you are a fan of anything wrestling, DVDs, action figures, VHS tapes, magazines, posters, you name it, you can find it inside of the Madhouse Toy Chest. Mention that you heard this advertisement on tonight's episode of Wrestling Unwrapped and receive a free gift with your purchase and a personal apology from me for completely fudging up this intro earlier on in the show. That is stores.ebay.com/Madhouse Toy Chest.
As well, if you want to hear this episode on demand later on in the week, or if you want to hear any of our old episodes, including our WrestleMania 14 review from 2 weeks ago, be sure to check out W2Mnet.com as we are a presentation of the W2M Network. Once again, for more information, not only on our show, but Wrestling to the Max, Soccer to the Max, Football to the Max, Fantasy Football to the Max, and all the wonderful shows as part of the network, check out W2Mnet.com. Alrighty. In terms of next week, not 100% certain. Stick to our Facebook. We're going to have to figure something out. Harry has prior engagements that are far more important than our podcast. Trust me, I know, and I'm not being sarcastic. So we're going to have to figure something out for next week. Maybe we actually do the WrestleMania 33 review and hope that it doesn't go 5 hours and 10 minutes like the actual paper.
No, you're not doing the WrestleMania 33 review without me.
My show. We want to do it, I'll do it.
Anarchy! Anarchy!
Aw, does someone not get what they want? Anyway, 2 weeks from tonight, though, we will definitely be back informal doing WCW Spring Stampede 2000 featuring almost every title being vacant. Why? Because Vince Russo hates everybody. Or at least hates wrestling. Contrary to what he tries to say. Featuring the ungodly 14 14-match card, including the tournament to crown, the World Tag Team Champion, the United States Champion, the Hardcore Champion, the Cruiserweight Champion, and, of course, the World Heavyweight Champion. Why? Because Vince Russo hates everybody. Oh, and the Harris Brothers are on it, too.
Technically speaking, the Heavyweight Championship match was a straight-up one-on-one match.
It was still the finals.
That's still a one-on-one match. I mean, it's also the best match on the card, to tell you what you need to know.
And, of course, who was in it? Jeff Jarrett.
Why? Because Vince Russo hates us all. Thank you, Vinny Roo. I'm Harry Broderick.
In there.
That's fine. I'm Harry Broadhurst.
And I'm Patrick Ketza. We will see you next time. You have been listening to Wrestling Unwrapped review WWF WrestleMania 11 here on the W2M Network. We'll see you next week.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts. Plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.